Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the final installment of discussing Election 2020. And today I have on one of my partners who's been an integral part of the Dominican Star this year. Chelsea's out. Chelsea, how are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. First off, thanks for coming on the podcast and, you know, wrapping up this series that's been very successful. And I'm looking forward to having a great dialogue with you here today.
Yep, same here. Thank you for inviting
me. Yeah, anytime. So, first question I want to get started off with, or the first topic, is that the Electoral College has met and approved Joe Biden as the next president of the United States. And I wanted to ask you first off, what do you think this affirmation of President Biden being, you know, now President Biden as the next president of the U.S. mean for the United States?
Well, I definitely think that it means different things to different people. I definitely felt that here at Dominican University, most people are very celebratory of his victory because we have a large Hispanic population and we have a large undocumented student population. And Biden, in his immigration policy, said that he was going to promote a path to citizenship for a lot of undocumented students and dreamers. So I definitely think for a lot of people here on our campus, they're very happy that he won. But it might be mean other things to other people. I have not come in contact with a lot of other Americans, but there are other people outside campus who are not very, excited that he won because they were in support of the other candidate. So, yeah.
Right. There's going to be obviously mixed emotions in every election because there was, you know, over 70 million people that did vote for Donald Trump. And while, you know, he came up short, there were also, you know, a lot of people that voted for Joe Biden and eventually won in the presidency. So there's going to be, you know, a lot of happy campers and a lot of sad campers. In terms of, let's fast forward to, you know, after Inauguration Day. What do you think are some of the first, you know, important steps? You know, presidents like to talk about their, you know, first 100 days in office. What do you think are some of the important steps that Joe Biden has to, you know, undergo? And I think you've mentioned it already is, you know, a path to citizenship for undocumented immigrants is an important one.
Yeah. And that was definitely something he based his campaign on. I think one of the most important thing on his agenda right now is to make sure that people are receiving vaccines when there's supplies available to the public. Obviously, the health workers are going to go first, and then there's going to be people who are taking care of the elderly who work in the care facilities. I think coronavirus, like in general, and vaccine and mask mandates are the most important things. Like that concerns me a lot because, you know, this is a health crisis and it's definitely affecting a lot of students, affecting whether or not we'll for the next semester and everything like that. And it also will determine how many people reads our print newspaper, as I'm pretty sure you know.
Right. So you would, I would assume you are in agreement with, you know, it caused some stir from, you know, the other side of the aisle in terms of in politics that Joe Biden said that the first 100 days in office, he will have a mass mandate. Now, in terms of, you know, how strict that mask mandate is from, say, state to state. But it sounds like, you know, first 100 days, everyone's going to wear a mask.
Yeah. And that's the most important thing, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's like you said, it's a health crisis and we, you know, we have to, you know, be safe. Absolutely. So then what would I want to, you know, have you, you know, say you were speaking to the other side of the aisle, you know, someone who might be anti-mask, you know, what would you say in terms of defending the mask mandate or, you know, and defending, you know, President-elect Biden's words?
Yeah, I mean, I do know a couple people who are like not taking the mask mandate seriously and saying that whatever was on the news was like a hoax or whatever. And I don't know, I don't want really like talking about politics with other people, but I just want people to be on the safe side because those are the people I care about. And I always encourage them to wear a mask. And I always, whenever I talk to them, I just do my best to kind of like get in the message that hand sanitation, wearing a mask and everything like that. Whether or not my suggestions will be followed, I mean, it's up to these other people, but I do my best to keep myself safe so that I can keep other people safe.
Right. And I think the next part of everyone staying safe is the vaccine. You know, transitioning to the vaccine topic, we have seen the vaccine taken by some frontline workers. You know, I did see a tweet, you know, the person who was the first person to get the vaccine, you know, it seems like it's a monumental step in terms of fighting this pandemic. And, you know, a lot of credit is put to the Trump administration and Pfizer and Moderna and all those companies who put in, you know, all the time and effort to get this done, because it is, you know, it's the fastest vaccine that, you know, we've ever seen in American history.
Yeah. I mean, it did take a year for this vaccine to be available, and almost a year for this vaccine to be available, and all the, I guess, like the months before that, all we had was mask mandate, right? And how many people listened to that?
Right. Yeah, like we alluded to earlier, there's going to be, you know, pushback, you know, obviously from the other side of the aisle. And like you said, you know, you've run into people that, you know, may not be following the mask mandate or mask rules as other people are. And, you know, I think you had a great point where it's, you know, you're telling whoever to wear the mask to wear it because, you know, it's the people you care about. You know, the last thing we want is to lose someone close to us or lose, you know, anybody at all. You know, that's just been the hard part of the pandemic. In terms of more on the vaccine talk, where do you think we go from here in terms of, you know, what are your overall thoughts on the vaccine? You know, how fast it got here? Do you believe it's safe? And do you believe that, you know, what are your just overall thoughts in general on it?
Well, I definitely think it's safe because a lot of the health experts, like national health experts in the United States and also in other countries, have promoted, you know, the vaccines, recommending everybody taking it. Throughout this entire pandemic, I felt like the only people that I truly trust are the health experts, because they are the people who actually know what are the natures and characteristics of this virus and how to best prevent it. And I think it's the best thing to do is to listen to the health experts. And when they say that the vaccine is safe enough, I believe it is safe enough for the public.
Yeah, I mean, that's what a lot of people have been doing. You know, maybe they've been sort of muting politicians or maybe muting news anchors and listening to the experts. But then, you know, maybe there's some people that are not listening to the experts and listening to, you know, their favorite late night talk show host. You know, what would you say about that?
Sorry, what was that? You got cut off for a sec.
So like you said, people have listened, a lot of people have listened to the health experts, but then there are some people who say don't listen to the health experts and instead listen to, say, their favorite, you know, late night talk show host, and, you know, get information from there. What would you say about that?
Okay. You know, it kind of reminds me of one time when I met someone who is anti-vaccine. I believe they are called anti-vaxxers, vacciners or something like that. And they believe that some vaccines have a direct link to autism in children. And I thought that a lot of the times when people say, don't trust, you know, some authority or someone who's definitely like providing authentic information, a lot of the times they are just being overly emotional about something that has happened in their past or that they had a bad experience about. And you know, a lot of times they blame it on someone they know or some authority they know. Because, you know, as humans, we are always trying to find the why in what something happened. And sometimes when the why or the reason on why something has happened is not available, we just subscribe to lies. And that's has been what has happened during this pandemic. And that I felt like there's going to be something like this keep on happening after the pandemic as well. Like, it's the same energy that people uses to subscribe to conspiracy theories, like outright blatant lies. And this is something very, I guess, depressing to me as a journalism major. It's like, sometimes you can give people all the facts you know, but they won't listen to you. And the best you could do is just do your best work, and hopefully someday they will turn around and realize what has gone wrong.
Yeah, you know, the last thing, you know, we want to do as say, you know, part of the paper is to, you know, tweet out a lie or write about a lie. That's not, you know, truthful journalism. You know, we are striving every day at the Dominican Star or our schoolwork or our future work to report the truth, you know, report the facts, and then, you know, and then leave it up to the viewer to decide. You know, it's we can only do so much, but our job is to, you know, make sure that we're accurate.
Yeah.
Like you said, in terms of, again, like, subscribing to lies, research is important. You know, research in terms of writing a story or, you know, like I usually do, you know, I'll read something, but then, you know, especially with, you know, all this stuff, you know, flying around about, say, fake news or, you know, you can't trust this news source, you can only trust this one. You know, I usually like to, you know, I'll read a story. You know, I have, you know, my favorite websites for news, as I'm sure you do. But, you know, I like to take a story and then I'll do like my own research as well. You know, I'm going to fact check the source, or I'm going to fact check, you know, the stat, just so, you know, it's kind of like the checks and balances, but also to, you know, do your own digging, because there could be some stuff on the surface that is a lie.
Yeah. And to make sure not to let your emotion get in the way. Because I felt like a lot of the things that people share on social media regarding a political candidate or something that has happened, you know, they will share from a very polarized media outlet, and then it will confirm to something they already believe in. For example, if they believe that candidate A is a bad person, they will believe something outrageous said about candidate A. And yeah, and I felt like emotion and a healthy amount of criticism is always best in judging any source.
Right. If the criticism is deemed appropriate, then absolutely, you know, criticize a source for, you know, reporting something fake, or, you know, criticize a source for, you know, including, say, bias in what could be, what should just be a news report. So there is, you know, that sense of, you know, checks and balances when looking at an article. And I think it's a great point you said, you know, don't let emotion get in the way, because, you know, a like or a retweet, say, on Twitter, you know, you can keep spreading this story, like you said, about candidate A. You don't like candidate A, but, you know, you're going to continue to, you know, spread a story that, you know, is a lie, but you let your emotion get in the way? I mean, how often do you think that you see that every day?
How often do I think I see that every
Yes.
day? I mean, just in general on social media or like...
Yeah, in general on your social media pages.
Oh, pretty often. I think especially for people in my age group. I think people share things that are intended to provoke a certain type of emotion, whether that is anger or joy, or mostly like between those two like spectrum and extremes, whether something that provokes anger against someone or something that provokes happiness like for someone. So I would say I definitely see it a lot on social media, especially.
I want to switch back to,
how about you?
For me, I think most definitely. I think, you know, emotion can be very strong for people, you know, in terms of their political views or just in general. You know, are they going to agree or disagree with, say, you know, something silly like this is the best movie of all time, this is not the best movie of all time. You know, emotions are going to carry someone to say, you know, this story is great or this story's terrible, pass it on. You know, we have to expose this certain story, you know, expose this certain author. So there is a sense of emotion, you know, driving, say, you know, a new story rather than the facts driving a new story.
Yeah, definitely.
I wanted to circle back to COVID-19 and the COVID response. What have you thought of President-elect Biden's response so far, in, you know, considering that since he was officially announced the winner of the election, he formed like his own COVID team. So what do you say, I mean, how would you compare his response to what, you know, Vice President Pence has been doing since March?
Well, I think he's definitely taking this pandemic more seriously than the Trump administration. He's arranging the task force, and I felt that a lot of the ways that he has approached this pandemic is contrasting what the Trump administration has done. You know, he's always wearing a mask, and he's always very adamant about health measures that were proposed by the health officials. So I think he's doing a relatively favorable job than what I have seen so far coming from the White House.
A question I have asked every student on the podcast is this. So you have, you know, Vice President Pence and his task force, right? And then you have President-elect Biden and his task force. So now you have, instead of just, you know, one source of information, right? Everyone's been listening to, you know, say here for Illinois, they've been listening to Governor Pritzker, or for national, they've been listening to Mike Pence and his task force. And now you have Joe Biden's task force also, you know, saying information and informing the public on their thoughts. Do you think it is a problem or a conflict of interest, say, of, you know, Vice President Pence's team saying something and then Joe Biden saying another? You know, is it, who do, you know, the Americans look to right now? I think there's some sort of conflict of interest in having two people, you know, having two parties, you know, putting out their own information.
Yeah, and I definitely agree with you that having two different parties putting out their different task force is not something that is beneficial in the long term. I think it would be best for the political parties to work together, to be on the same page about the pandemic and how to best protect people, and putting that as priority instead of forming different task force. Maybe the two task force can learn from each other. And, since Joe Biden is going to become the next president, perhaps they could learn about something that the Pence, task force has done and learn and improve on their own task force.
Yeah, I mean, there is definitely, you do need that bipartisan, you know, agreement, working together. You know, we've tried, we have seen that trying to work in terms of a new stimulus package for Americans. You know, that has been at a stalemate for quite some time. I know Mitch McConnell today said that, you know, the Republicans don't want to go anywhere. They want to get this deal done now. They want to get it done as soon as possible. And then there's been, you know, mixed messages from Speaker Pelosi in terms of, you know, she says that, you know, something is not better than nothing. You know, she wants, you know, her entire package to be approved rather than just, you know, part of it. You know, she's seen more in the bigger picture of she wants everything approved, you know, rather than just a small amount to get, you know, relief to Americans. You know, I'm, as you've seen, you know, President Trump has stepped in and said, you know, I'm ready to sign checks to send out to people. What are your overall thoughts on how this new stimulus package has been a stalemate for quite some time?
Well, I'll just say this. I don't know enough about the stalemate between the stimulus package to make a comment on that. I'm not sure if the stalemate, they were like their point of argument regarding the stimulus check, whether if the stimulus check is for health workers or for veterans or for, you know, young adults. I mean, it could be different segment of the population, and I couldn't make a judgment on that without knowing, like, you know, the whole picture.
Understandable. But and more of a broader question, do you think that, you know, a stimulus package or a stimulus check should have been here a long time ago?
Well, there was one at the beginning.
Correct.
Right?
There was one in the beginning, and then there was, you know, a call to action for a second one, you know, come around,
yeah.
I'd say, what, late summer?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yes, I definitely think there definitely needs to be a stimulus package, especially for the small businesses in the area that are really struggling during this pandemic. You know, especially the people who are most hard hit by this pandemic are the people who deserve and merit the stimulus check.
Another, you know, big part of the pandemic has been, you know, limiting crowds, you know, no indoor dining. There's been a lot of restaurants, you know, going to outdoor dining. When the weather was still nice, you know, they were able to sit outside. But now it's, you know, obviously getting colder, say in Chicago. So people are building tents, you know, they're getting heaters. You know, what are your overall thoughts on, you know, partial closures of businesses? And I know that it's been, you know, obviously a big conversation of small businesses hurting during the pandemic. What are your overall thoughts on closure of businesses and, you know, limiting crowds, knowing that it could have a negative effect, say, on a small business?
I mean, in my perspective, I think it's health first before anything else. I mean, you couldn't get anything after you're dead, right? So I definitely support, like, having limiting large gatherings of people. But on the other hand, I sympathize with the small businesses that have been hurting through this. And I think it's definitely also helpful to have, you know, services where people can pick up food from the restaurants and take it home or somewhere where they are isolated.
Right. Carry out has been a huge part of the pandemic in terms of supporting small businesses. You know, we've heard that a lot. And just, you know, citizens trying to do their part into helping these businesses. You know, the amount of fundraisers I've seen, or the amount of, you know, outcry and support for small businesses, and, you know, we got to keep them open, you know, yelling at the government for, you know, being too much, too involved. You know, there's been a lot of, you know, a lot of people shouting from all different angles on this issue.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I just felt that this, how the pandemic was handled in, like, in this country at least, is very disastrous. And I felt that a lot of people have suffered that in the ways that they shouldn't have. Yeah, because of other people. Because if you are making a conscious choice of not social distance, not wearing a mask, or knowing that you might have the virus but still, like, going around, you're also affecting other people. And that's why how this pandemic has spread so exponentially.
Right. Like you've echoed multiple times, you know, it's health first. And, you know, knowing that it can spread very fast. You know, and there, you know, the people who say are asymptomatic and going out there not knowing they have it, but they are spreading it. I mean, that's what is, you know, a whole big part of why this thing is so dangerous, is because, you know, you could be spreading it without even knowing. That's why there's been, you know, such reinforcement in wearing masks, you know, washing your hands, you know, staying, you know, 6 feet apart. And that was obviously, those three things were, you know, heavily focused on at Dominican. Transitioning to Dominican and, you know, our classrooms, when if we had in-person learning and, you know, say social hall or interacting with other students on campus, how do you think Dominican's response was to the pandemic and all their measures they put in place?
I think Dominican overall has done as much as they can in terms of balancing the health measures to protect students, but also having that in-person class, that academic environment for students to get whatever their tuition's worth is. But there's only so much, as you know, that the university can do. The university can say that, do your campus clear every day so that we can have, you know, a measurement of how many people are okay. There's also health measurements about wearing face masks, but, you know, there isn't any strong reinforcement of those measures because we don't want to be in people's face about, you know, following those measures. But the university is doing the best it can, and I'm in fully support of all the measures it has implemented.
Right, and I think Campus Clear was probably one of the smartest things, you know, we could have done, because if someone reports one day they have, you know, say a mild cough, right? You're supposed to be honest in your reporting, and, you know, you got a mild cough. So, you know, like I remember, Dr. Barrington Price referred to as, well, if someone reports they had a cough, we can go look at their schedule and say, well, they did check in on Campus Clear, say 2 days ago in their chem class, right? They were going to chem. They checked in on Campus Clear saying they were all healthy. But now in terms of looking back at, you know, Campus Clear, you go back to their class, you know, who was within, you know, a certain distance of sitting with them? Were they interacting with friends, teachers? And just like that, you know, just the reporting of contact tracing and just making sure that everyone was safe. You know, that's why it was so important to put in your Campus Clear. And if I remember correctly, like, if you logged in, you know, so many consecutive days, you had like you were eligible to get like a gift card. So there was some sort of incentive, you know, to participating in, you know, keeping campus safe, because like I stressed in the newspaper earlier in the year is, you know, it was hard, I'd say, to finish off the semester all remote, just because you don't have that in-classroom feeling, or you don't have access to, say, the library for resources. You know, you're stuck doing everything, you know, at home, in your room, with limited sources. How did you deal with the end of the spring semester, you know, knowing what was going on in the world, but also trying to finish off the semester?
Oh, it's been really stressful for me. I mean, when this year first started, my family who are in China, they told me about this pandemic, and they told me to not go anywhere during March because they are scared that it might spread in the United States. And in the beginning, I was like, it's not really going to spread because I don't know. I don't know what I was thinking because I felt like my country, China, is so far away. But nevertheless, I listened to their advice and I just didn't go anywhere. And it's scary how much this has changed our lives and how much it's still changing. And I've been just trying to keep up with my schoolwork. I had a period where I just couldn't do anything, but I still do a little bit at a time. And I would say I'm currently finishing off the semester okay. I mean, not as well as I would like it to be, but in terms of online classes, I think I'm doing okay. And next semester, I'll be doing fully online. So I will try to be off campus as much as possible. Yeah. How about you?
Yeah, it was definitely a big change because, you know, we've never been in that like fully, you know, that full online setting. You know, obviously, I've taken an online class before. Maybe you have taken like an online class before. You know,
I had never taken
online really? Class. Wow. Because like when I was at community college, you know, I would go in person for maybe 3 classes, but then I'd have like, you know, one online, you know, because sometimes, you know, a class can be accomplished all online. So, you know, I would take that option, just say, you know, maybe, you know, I don't have to go to campus one day, or it just fits better with my schedule if I can, you know, prioritize over the week, you know, and have, you know, everything due on a certain day for the online class. So there are like, you know, there are benefits to it. But then there are, you know, drawbacks. I think the biggest thing for me was like not being, you know, in like, you know, say a school setting, like sitting in the classroom, being able to speak to the teacher directly, you know, having those resources of office hours. I know teachers didn't make, you know, office hours available via Zoom, and it was just, I mean, it was different for everybody. It was very odd to be like, you know, fully online and, you know, being a part of, you know, a Zoom class where everyone's still trying to figure out how they're going to go about not just school, but the pandemic.
Yeah, and I think it's definitely also different if you are introverted or extroverted.
Right.
If you are introverted and not liking to be with people, then this has worked okay for you so far because you can just like turn off your camera and turn off your volume.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're extroverted, then this has been awful.
Yeah, and I want to go back to what you said about, you know, you said, you know, your family from China was saying that, you know, March could be a very different time. And, you know, you want to stay safe, you know, don't go anywhere. And I remember, you know, we got a jump on the reporting aspect, you know, our March issue before spring break. We had, you know, it was COVID exclusive in terms of our cover, in terms of our intro story about where it is in the world. And is it going to reach us? And I don't remember at that time specifically of how many cases were in the U.S., but I do remember covering when there was a report of someone who tested positive on campus. And, you know, that was a big story for Dominican in terms of, you know, it hit home. And, it you know, that's always a scary part of it when it gets close to us, especially, you know, not just that.
That seemed like ages ago.
Yeah, wow. It does feel like a long time ago, but
wow,
it was in sense a big story in terms of just on of the, you know, on now, you know, the university's response to it and how they're going to handle it, because, you know, no one else was handling it before. I mean, I don't know from when that was, when we reported on that, you know, how many cases were actually in the state of Illinois. You know, just it all moves so quick. And even looking back to, I think I even wrote something in January or February of, you know, the first reported case in Chicago where some people that were, there was, you know, one or, you know, a member of a family or a husband or a wife coming back from China. And, you know, they eventually got sick. But yeah, it does feel like ages ago, but it was, you know, looking back, I thought that was one of our best issues for the paper in terms of, you know, everyone working together, everyone collecting the information, everyone, you know, working on the cover, working on that interactive map that we had of where it is in the world. And just kind of, it was like, it was almost like a mini alert, like a mini, like sound the alarm for campus, because I felt like, you know, we wanted to let everybody know. And like you said, we weren't really sure where the pandemic was going in that direction, you know, in what direction it was going to go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And yeah, this year just went downhill since day one.
Yeah. Everyone, you know, yeah. We continue to say we can't wait for, you know, 2020 to be over. And, you know, in terms of, you know, a vaccine is here. You know, there's still a crazy amount of cases and unfortunately, you know, a lot of deaths. But you hope, you know, the vaccine is positive news and just where we're trending in terms of, you know, just continuing to learn more about the virus, you know, having, like you said, the health experts on it 24/7 and then doing our part of wearing masks, you know, washing our hands, staying away from big groups, you know, staying, especially, you know, it's been reinforced to say stay for around the holidays. You know, even though it's hard to, you know, you want to be with your family, you know, it's just, you know, I think health first has been a good phrase of this episode in terms of we continue to repeat it because it really is that important.
Yeah. And you're graduating this semester, right?
Yes. I'll be, this is my last week of stuff officially, so.
Oh, gosh. How do you feel about that?
Excited to move on. I mean, I've been in school for, you know, 23 years old. Now I've been in school for what feels like an eternity, really. And it's, you know, I'm looking forward to, you know, moving on into, you know, my career choice. Have a few, you know, potential interviews right now. So in terms of getting, you know, an internship or like an entry level job is, you know, on the forefront. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, it is, it's probably going to be weird for the first, you know, while in terms of not having, you know, like that set school schedule or having like, you know, certain, you know, we've been in the practice so much of having, you know, of homework and, you know, sticking to a certain schedule of, you know, knocking out a class or, you know, continuing to build upon, you know, completing a semester, stuff like that. So it is going to be weird in that aspect, but no, I'm ready to move on to the next chapter of, you know, officially getting into the workforce for, you know, what I've been studying for.
Yeah. And you're interested in sports journalism, right?
Yeah. Sports journalism is, you know, I'd say most important, but, you know, in terms of this year, as, you know, weird as it may be, you know, I've got a bigger interest in politics. I think once everyone can vote, you know, you want to be a little more engaged. But I've been, you know, heavily engaged in terms of, you know, what our decision makers are doing, you know, studying up on, you know, who to vote for and, you know, watching election coverage and understanding more about the election process and understanding more about, you know, the roles of certain people in the White House. You know, the list goes on and on in terms of political, you know, conversation and political objectives. But, I mean, I've gotten very interested in that. I mean, I think, like, that could be maybe something, you know, I could write about. But, yeah, I mean, sports journalism or politics or, you know, anything in terms of social media marketing or, you know, being, you know, the social media, you know, person for a set company or a set team, you know, those are some things that I see as a career path.
Yeah, that'd be definitely exciting. I mean, you have many options to go into politics or sports or social media. I mean, and fact-checking is always going to be relevant for the rest of your life.
Yeah, so, absolutely. Even in sports, that's you know, a big thing. And we've seen it through, you know, the presidential debates or through, you know, through their speeches or their set, you know, there's certain TV interviews of, you know, I think what's the main one? What is it like Politico, you know, they, and like, you know, the New York Times, yeah. You know, they have mm-hmm. their own, you know, true or false, you know, in terms of fact checking a phrase or fact checking a quote. Where do you, you know, what are your thoughts on, you know, the fact checkers and, you know, how much do you pay attention to, you know, how much do you pay attention to those, you know, certain stories or those certain people who are, you know, mainly focused on checking out the facts and how, you know, how true or false they are?
I think whatever they do is very valuable to us, you know, very kind of like information overload, loaded, like, you know, internet. But I also felt that it's like you can give people fish, but if you teach them how to fish, then they know how to fish for the rest of their lives. So I think it's very valuable to have fact checkers out there, but I also think it's very important to train people to become fact checkers. So that way, in the future, we will become less susceptible to misinformation and disinformation during any circumstances.
Right, and I think, like I, you know, said earlier about, you know, us as, you know, student journalists checking the facts, but in terms of what we've been, you know, taught in our classes and what we've been doing for, you know, certain research papers or any academic writing in general is, you know, going right to the sources that can be trusted, you know, .gov, .edu, .net, you know, staying away from Wikipedia or blogs, you know, using Google Scholar, using, you know, the hundreds of databases to our, you know, availability at the Dominican Library. There's a lot of ways to, you know, be a part of, you know, the fact checking in terms of using the correct sources we have at our disposal.
Definitely, yeah.
Throughout your coursework, and I don't know if any classes, you know, if you've taken the semester really touched on the pandemic or as much or as, you know, politics has been a big conversation. You know, what have you seen through, you know, politic talk or any, you know, pandemic talk through your peers that has interested you?
I don't remember having discussed the pandemic as much in any of my classes because I'm mainly just taking prerequisites and not any like sociology or political science or journalism classes. So I don't think I'm like prepared to answer that as yet.
So it's been a lot of just like status quo, just like staying with the coursework.
Yeah, staying with coursework and make up the missing works. Currently, I have zero missing work, so that's good. Yeah, just keep updated on everything that has happened so far. And I felt like most students are the same, like during this time.
Yeah, you know, a lot of us want to, you know, stay on the written path, you know, get everything done in time because, you know, school still, you know, is important. And we have to, you know, finish what you start. But, you know, I've had multiple teachers who, you know, I don't know if you've had, you know, the same experience, but teachers, you know, saying, you know, shoot an email to you saying, hey, I'm always here if you need to talk about not just classwork, but about, you know, the pandemic and, you know, what you're dealing with in life. You know, another class, a teacher would open up saying, how you doing? You know, how not just, you know, not how are you doing with, you know, our current coursework, how are you doing in general, you know, just like those little checkups that, you know, we've seen plenty of times in just everyday life in terms of from friends or professors in general, and, you know, before a pandemic. But I think it's very important now, especially too, just because times are a lot different.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I felt like some professors did this better than other professors, but I felt like students in general really appreciated the professors that actually did the like actual effort in checking up with students.
Right. Well, to close out our discussion here, I just want to get your general thoughts on the path of this country going forward. And do you believe that, you know, President-elect Biden is the right man in charge? And if, you know, are you, you know, trusting him to put the right people around him, and, you know, with dealing with the COVID response and the vaccine coming and worrying about a stimulus package and, you know, worrying about, you know, the economy and all the things that factor into the president's job and, you know, what, you know, overwhelmingly will, you know, be a part of the president's mark on history. You know, a lot of the responsibilities are going to fall on him, and there's going to be a lot of blame or a lot of praise. So what are your general thoughts on where do you think the country goes from here, and how well you trust the next administration that looks to be in place?
Well, I definitely trust the people more than administration. I trust the American people on voting whoever is best for the country, you know, onto the highest executive positions of this country. So, I mean, I don't vote. I'm an international student in this country. So, I felt that American people in general, I'm very optimistic about American people's judgments and opinions. And that's why I kept my studies here in this country, despite some, you know, difficulties that I have encountered. So I would definitely trust in people's judgments in how they will elect other high officials, and not just for the White House, but just in the state and everywhere around that.
Right. That is, you know, that is the beauty of America, is that we have a democracy where the people have a voice. You know, there is plenty of places where the people don't have a voice. You know, the people, officials elect themselves. But you brought up another good point, that it's not just the presidential election that's going to affect, you know, say the decision making or the day-to-day life. You know, it's voting for your representatives for the House and the Senate, and it's voting for your state reps. It's voting for even, you know, the mayor in your town. You know, voting is that important, because you do have the voice through the ballot box.
Yeah.
Well, again, Chelsea, I want to thank you for coming on.
Well, I want to thank you for everything you did this year as the editor for the newspaper. I mean, we lost so many people in our, like, editorial board. We lost so many people, like, writers and everything like that. So thank you so much for pushing through with everything, like, all the difficulties, challenges that we have encountered. And yeah, and I wish you the best of luck in your career, and come back and visit us.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. Yeah, it was definitely different, but, you know, we accomplished a lot, and I thought we did an amazing job with the resources we had and the small team that we had. We were able to accomplish a lot, and I'm proud of all the work we did. So, yeah, thank you guys. You, Isabel, and obviously Dr. Jenks, and, you know, Dave as the, you know, design teacher, and then all the other, you know, Dr. Reinhardt and, you know, Shonda, you know, all the other resources that we had, you know, made it all possible. But again, Chelsea, thank you for coming on the podcast. Everybody listening, thank you for tuning in to all these installments of discussing the 2020 election with political science students, and now Chelsea, one of the main parts of the Dominican Star. You can view obviously this episode and all recent episodes at DominicanStar.com, and you can find us on all our social media channels. Thank you, everyone, for listening.